cycling podcast Femina in association with RAFA. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, RAFA exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by Skoda. Dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Orla Shinawi.
Hello.
And Rose Manley.
Hi, nice to be back.
Yeah, July episode of the cycling podcast Femina.
Yeah.
We have got the Tour de France going on around about us. There's a men's supporting race happening at the moment.
Earlier
this morning, we watched.
An afterthought.
We were up early for La Course,
very early.
which finished a couple of hours ago, and we're gonna talk about that in the first part. We're gonna talk about the Giro Rosa in the second part. We've got other bits and pieces as well, a bit of news as well. But this is our first, I suppose, outing together since the Women's Tour, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That was good fun. That was an intense few days.
Yeah.
It was an intense few days.
It was an intense
few
days.
The three of us
together. Yeah,
in a good way. It was like a school trip.
I wouldn't have said intense. I like intensity.
I
need. Now he's like exactly. Look how
Richard was internally fuming the entire
intense.
Time, and we thought we were on a little holiday.
I need a bit of intensity in my life. I enjoyed it.
I just need to stay a short kid.
It was good fun. This is supposed to be a good thing.
It's not though.
No, people don't say I'm breaking up with you because you're not intense enough.
Well, Rose
Richard
and Orla. Rose and Orla.
Likes to feel alive.
It's awkward to do this while we're recording, but I really.
But.
It's been great.
Well, no, hang on. We are intense. That's good. We can keep the relationship going.
Yeah.
We've established that.
Yeah. Great. I like
that's
that.
That's good. Yeah.
Let's long may it continue. So we had an intense race, and I'm sure we can all agree that was a good thing.
It was a very good thing.
It was a
I'm
great
still
race.
In a bit of a high, I'm not going to lie.
I'm glad you're still on a high, Orla, because you were worried about coming down off that high, but you're sustaining it at the moment.
Yeah, well, I was so buzzing after the race. Like, really, I just thought, I'm not sure I can remember the last race that I've actually been to and witnessed that was so exciting to watch, genuinely. And I don't know, I know I'm partial to getting carried away by things, but I don't think I was getting carried away. I think it was just a brilliant, exciting, thrilling race that looked like it could be anybody's until the last climb. Then it looked like it was all sewn up, and then it was wide open.
There was a twist and tail.
Again.
It helped that we were watching the finish, and we couldn't see a screen, and the brow of the hill was just before us, and we were just waiting for a rider to emerge, and then two riders emerged. Well, we'll not spoil the surprise if you don't know the result, because Orla, you're going to give us a news roundup, and it could be quite a meaty one. Because
I've trimmed it down,
yeah.
I've edited.
Okay.
Yeah, if you live in a world without Google and you don't know the result, then we'll keep it until the very end.
Okay, I'm just going to go for a little lie down, a little sleep. Rose, do you want a cup of tea?
I'm going to watch the men's race come in, actually.
This is quite short, actually.
Okay, well, let's go for it then. Come on, let's go for it. Settle in, buckle up.
Right. Enjoy the ride. Okay, La Course 2018. We had a five-person break on the second climb of the day, the Côte de Saint-Jean-de-Sixte, and that was Lotte Lepisto of Cervelo Bigla, Leah Kirchman of Team Sunweb, Malgorazza Jasinka of Movistar, Leah Thomas of United Healthcare, and Anna Christian of Trek Drops. Now, that splintered on the next climb, the Col de Rome, leaving Leah Thomas out front eventually. She got a lead of 1:10. Then Cecily Utrip-Ludwig attacked from the peloton. She put in a huge effort, took over the race lead by the top of that climb, overtaking Thomas about 2 kilometres from the top. And we'll talk about her in a little minute because she is and has been wonderful. But her lead grew before the descent to 1:50. Leah Thomas was still out on her own behind, second on the road and building an increasing lead over the peloton at that stage, despite riding solo. Lucinda Brand then attacked on the descent of the Col de Rome, brilliant descending from the cyclocross rider. She overtook Thomas. Then Anna Meek van Vleuten, Amanda Spratt, Anna van der Breggen, Ashley Mullman-Pasio, all leading the group behind with a few digs from Amanda Spratt of Mitchelton Scott, but she couldn't stay with the select group of van Vleuten, van der Breggen, Mullman-Pasio, and they caught up with Lucinda Brand. Brand was then dropped with 17 to 18 kilometres to go. And then those three phenomenal riders pushed on. They eventually caught Cecily at Trip Ludwig at just about 1.7 kilometres from the top of the final climb, the Col de la Colombière. Ashley Milman-Passio then put in a brief dig. We were wondering how that three-rider group was going to try to get to the line, whether they're going to go together or somebody was going to try to go off the front. Milman-Passio tried to go off the front. She said later that she knew she was on her limits, and she was. Both the Dutch riders were able to counterattack, and Anna van der Breggen was the one who pushed on and led the way to the top of the climb. Milman-Passio then dropped off the back. Anna van der Breggen kept that lead over Annemiek van Vleuten, but only really built to about 12 seconds on the descent. At 3.2 kilometres, she still had an 8-second lead, but by the Flamme Rouge, they'd stopped showing the time gaps. I counted a very rudimentary 3-second gap. But as you say, Richard, we were standing beyond the finish line, which is at the brow of a hill, so it was a slight uphill to the finish. It did look like Anna van der Breggen was doing her thing, which is going off solo at the front of a race and simply staying out by herself to the finish line. So we fully expected that to be the case. We saw the orange of Anna van der Breggen coming over the crest of the hill first. Looked like she had the win. Annemiek van Vleuten just behind her, though, her green helmet bobbing left and right, going full gas to the line and took it with maybe, what, 5-10 metres to spare. An absolutely phenomenal end to a brilliant race. Annemiek van Vleuten then with the win. Anna van der Breggen just one excruciating second behind. Ashley Milman-Passio hung on for third. She was 1 minute, 22 seconds behind. And Cecily Uttrup Ludwig did a great job to hang on for fourth. 1 minute and 58. And that was a very abridged version of the race, because there was lots and lots of action out there, lots of attacks, lots of changes even from second and third on the road. Just almost too much to go into, but it was a thrilling race.
And we'll hear your news roundup at the start of the next part. We'll weigh about with the Giro Rosa and everything.
Yeah,
we'll hear all that.
We are a racing podcast.
We
shouldn't apologise.
No, I'm not apologising.
For telling our listeners what's been happening in a race.
Absolutely, and it was a great race. The start this morning in Annecy, it was an early start. It's a Tuesday morning. Fair to say, expectations were, if not low, then not exactly high. We weren't really sure whether this event this year was a step up on last year when there were 2 days, but it was a good course for racing, you know, with the climbs and the descents. Last year was almost like two time trials, really, mm-hmm. with the climb up they called d'Izoard. Today, they had, you know, four climbs, lots of descending, a good, encouraged attacking racing, and we had a really outstanding team performance from Cervelo Bigla, who deserve a lot of credit, because, as you mentioned, they had Lotta Lepisto, not one for this sort of course, but she was up there in the early break. Then, you know, Cecily Uttrup Ludwig going off up the road was perfect for Ashley Milman-Passio, and she almost got enough of a gap to think about winning the race. It looked at one point like she might actually do that, and well, Ashley Milman was delighted. We'll hear from her now, shall we? I spoke to her and Thomas Campagna, their sports director. We'll hear from him first, and then we'll hear from Ashley Milman-Passio. Well, a great race that we saw there. You must watch that. You must have been pleased with how the team performed.
Yeah, especially after the Giro, because in the Giro we tried really pure power and we couldn't go through with it for a stage win and also for the overall win. Nevertheless, the goal was to change the tactic today in order to put more pressure on Mitchelton, and that happened very well. It started with Lotta moving forward, putting pressure, having a rider there, and then the quality of Ludwig is already outstanding to make the attack there, to have the will to make it, and then it was close. Huh? It was 1 kilometer less, and she could have made it in the downhill, and then we would have seen maybe a different result. You know, we were not looking into the other teams today. We just wanted to make the race. We want to be in the lead of the race, also tactically, and unfortunately, Ashley was paying tribute to the Giro. You know, I expected her attacking one and a half to go and then to take over the lead in the downhill, but she couldn't make it, which is fully understandable, and so we have to take the result and as it is, and I can take it off as a good day.
Was it the plan in the morning, yes, when you spoke to them? Lepisto off first, Cecily next, yeah, and then Ashley.
Yeah. We wanted to have Lotta there for possible pull already to prepare the attack. She came back a little bit too early, but we got the attack, we got the gap. And then we wanted to have an attack, two to go, three to go to the summit, and then see what happened in the downhill. That was actually the plan, yeah.
So a satisfying day rather than one that's left you ecstatic with the result, I guess.
No, it was satisfying 2 weeks. with the whole team. We are a small team. Everybody forgets we are always ranked high, but we are a very small team. And it is just amazing how the girls are working together and achieving these things, not apart from the results. They're achieving a lot in women's cycling at the moment.
You know, we've seen in the last few weeks with Cecilie, really, we knew of her potential, but is she sort of knocking on the door of a big win now? We saw at the women's tour, she was the one rider who really took it on one day. Yeah. At Giro Rosa, she rode very well, and then today, you know, came close again.
Yeah, the thing was that she had actually a health issue, which was not detected when it happened, and we found it finally out, and since she has treated it, she's getting better every day. And we know that she has the quality physically, but also mentally. So it was just a matter of time, and now she is on her working stage to make it with the top 4 or 5, already with 22 years of age. I mean, this is just an amazing development.
That was a tremendous race.
Yeah, I was incredibly proud of the team today. Every girl gave everything. You know, it's been tough. We came from the Giro, and of course the legs are tired. And Clara and Lotta did an exceptional job to cover every attack in the beginning. And Nicole sort of stayed with me to keep me safe. And then Lotta got into the first breakaway. And then on the second to last climb, it was really cool to see Cile have the courage to go all in and to attack. And she had the girls scrambling. I mean, they didn't really know what to do, and you know, Anna was, Annemiek, you do it. Annemiek was, Anna, no, you do it. And yeah, I mean, I could obviously just follow. And yeah, in the end, I mean, obviously I was disappointed not to completely reward that impressive team performance. You know, I tried to attack as Cile came back, and maybe that was the nail in the coffin a little bit. I blew my legs.
It looked like you were just making a series of hard efforts. Must be a nice position to be in with a teammate up the road, but also that must have been really hard.
Yeah, I suppose every little acceleration adds up, and it sort of, you know, takes the edge off towards the end, especially after 10 days of racing with no rest day, and then a pretty long transfer in the car because it wasn't so easy to fly. So it all adds up, but either way, I mean, I'm just super proud of our effort and of our performance. And you know, we're not just moaning and grumbling and saying we deserve this, we want that. You know, we're putting action out there to show why we deserve it. And that, to me, is very important.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
The voice of Sam Piquet there reminds me to tell you that this month's episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina is sponsored by The Economist once again. The Economist is about far more than just economics and finance. It covers a range of subjects from politics and business to science, technology, arts and the environment. The Economist helps readers prepare for what's going on in the world around them. And in today's dynamic world, facts matter more than ever. For over 170 years, The Economist has delivered trustworthy intelligence that helps people like you choose where to stand on the issues that matter most.
And Richard, this month I tasked you with having a look through The Economist, not much of a task really, and picking out an article that might be of interest. What did you come up with?
Well, it's a bit obvious. I actually listened to this article because I've got The Economist app. And as well as reading, there's a button you can press at the top. Look, listen to this story.
I didn't know that.
And you can listen to it. So I listened to an article headlined, Can You Dig It? And it's the race for the world's largest underground bike park. The Netherlands, would you believe it? The Netherlands.
Shock.
Is experiencing an underground bike park boom. Anyone's been to Holland and seen train stations and so on, or Belgium for that matter, the mass of bikes outside train stations, it's becoming quite a problem. So The Hague had hoped to overtake Utrecht this spring with a new underground car park for bikes with 8,500 places. But Utrecht are going even further. Their underground bike park is expanding to 12,500 slots for bikes.
I love that they're having a battle of the bike parks. I mean, only in Holland or maybe Belgium, as you say, but that's brilliant, isn't it?
Dutch people have an estimated 1.3 bicycles per person. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, but I'll tell you something. My husband used to live in Holland, and the very first weekend that I went to visit him over there, I bought myself a Dutch bike because I had such FOMO with everybody cycling everywhere that I bought one straight away.
Anyway, that's the sort of article you find in The Economist. It really is extremely varied, and there's always something interesting that I find that I'm not reading in other media. So The Economist is offering a free copy of The Economist to listeners of the Cycling Podcast Femina. For your free print copy of The Economist, just text BIKES, BIKES, to 78070. for your free print copy of The Economist text Bikes to 78070. And a reminder that The Economist is a smart guide to the forces changing your world. Get your free copy now. So we heard there from Thomas Campagna and Ashley Moulman-Passio, who was third on the day. They were the perhaps the team of the day. And there's not a lot you can do against Annemiek van Vleuten and Anna van der Breggen. And at that moment in the race, towards the top of the Col de la Colombière, once Cecilia Utrecht-Ludwig had been brought back and Ashley Moulman-Passio had countered and then been brought back, it was just about power. And it was at that point Anna van der Breggen looked like the strongest rider in the race. She got the little gap on van Vleuten. She never gave up. But it looked like, you know, she was a fresher rider. She didn't ride the Giro Rosa. And it looked like that, you know, she was fresher, stronger, and she was gonna win.
And it looked like she was riding a very clever race as well, because when the three of them were working together to try to catch Utrecht-Ludwig,
the two of them. Because one of them was Moulman-Passio.
When the three of them were together, though, Moulman-Passio was putting in more of a turn at the front than Anna van der Breggen was, even though it was her teammate up the road. She was hiding, if you like, in the wheels quite a lot. Annemiek van Vleuten really did the lion's share of the effort there. And I thought that would have done it for her, really, because aside from the fact that she's come not so fresh off the Giro Rosa, she put in a big, big effort in that final climb. So to be able to counter Anna van der Breggen in the end was really phenomenal stuff.
But I suppose being at the Giro Rosa can kind of go two ways. Mm. I mean, we were kind of thinking this morning, oh, you know, all these riders going to be exhausted. But then again, they've built their seasons around peaking at probably a few days ago when everyone was going up the Zonkerland. So that means they would have been in the absolute best condition for facing kind of these huge mountains. And Anna van der Breggen, on the other hand, has not been on the road racing circuit, has been doing mountain bike racing. And she said in her, after the race, after she came second, which is something she's not used to, that she didn't want to say that it might have put her on the back foot, but I think she kind of maybe was thinking that.
Looking for excuses, eh? Well, I mean,
it's not like her, is it?
We've seen her, though, be so dominant, and it is very unusual for her to be beaten. And I mentioned while we were watching it that it's a very interesting moment to be a Dutch female cyclist because, you know, they've got such a strong team, an embarrassment of riches. But when it comes to World Championship on a very tough course, van Vleuten and van der Breggen are almost the two favourites, and yet they're teammates. Mm. And you think, well, how's that going to play out? You spoke to Anna van der Breggen at the finish, Rose. I actually spoke to her briefly at the start and I asked her about her break from racing, and she was a little bit testy in response to that. She didn't like the suggestion that she'd been on a break. But anyway, let's hear from her first at the start in Annecy and then at the finish. Where have you been the last few weeks? You're a bit of an advantage over some of the riders here, obviously, having not ridden the Giro, but what have you been doing the last few weeks?
Like the usual stuff, what you do as a cyclist, training, and I did also a mountain bike race.
Have you been training at altitude or anything like that, or just at home?
No, just home.
And the break that you've had, it's been designed, I gather, for the World Championships. That's your big game this season, is that right?
No, it's not really a break. I just didn't do the Giro. I mean,
and the Women's Tour?
You have to choose which races you do, and Giro was not in it for me this year. So,
is it about the World Championships, though?
No, not really. It's just to do something different. I did it 10 times already, and I felt my motivation was not that high anymore for it. I think there are beautiful races, so I picked other races this year.
And today, what are your hopes today?
I hope for good legs. I'm curious. I didn't do climbing in a race like this for a long time. So, yeah, I have to see. I think you feel quite fast how the legs are and if you're good enough to make it a hard race.
Anna, that's not a feeling that you're used to, is it?
No, it's not. And it's not a feeling I like, but that's also racing. For me it was a good race. A long time ago that I did long climbing like this. So, yeah, I felt quite good, but I knew in the end I was getting it quite difficult. But I didn't expect this difficult at the end. I just couldn't go stand anymore. So that last uphill, if you have it in the downhill, it's still okay. You can manage to get some speed, but that last uphill was just too far for me.
And did you know how close Annemiek was behind you in that last?
Yeah, I could see it. So.
And do you feel like taking a step away from road racing, doing the mountain biking, put you at a disadvantage at all? Or you felt as good as you would do anyway?
Yeah, I don't know. Mountain biking is different. It's like, it's more intensive. So it's not really doing the long climbs. That was a bit today. I had to look how I would feel on the long climbs. But that was quite good. So I think it's a good preparation.
One thing about Anna van der Breggen is we weren't really expecting her to even be here, because I spoke to Danny Stam of Bowles Dolmans at the women's tour, and he said that she wasn't going to race again until the World Championships, that she was taking the entire rest of the season to build up towards that, not take a break, Richard, training for the Worlds. So it was a bit of a surprise to us to see her name on the start list. I don't know, maybe the thinking was, I mean, Rose, we mentioned in the car on the way here that a lot of the riders at the start line seemed to be almost D-Mob happy from the Giro Rosa. I think there was a lot of confidence from the fact that they had conquered the Zonkelan, and certainly those who'd done well in that. Maybe the thinking was that the other riders were getting something of an advantage racing in those conditions, and that Anna being out of racing for the rest of the season wasn't necessarily going to stand in her favour. I don't know.
Now, one of the teams that caught your eye at the start, Rose, was United Healthcare. Yes. We don't see them in a lot of these big European races, and they certainly gave a good account of themselves. Leah Thomas was off the front for quite a bit, and Katie Hall, seventh in the end, decent performance from her. What were you expecting more, or were you intrigued to see how she would go on these sorts of climbs, because we know she's a great climber?
She is a brilliant climber, and I think I wasn't sure how to expect. I was kind of more intrigued to see how she got on, because she was very well in the American races, but if we think about the Tour of California, that was some months ago now. Actually seems like a lifetime ago almost, doesn't it? So she would have been putting everything into being in top condition for that. So perhaps her form is not as good as it was then. But also, the American teams don't get to see as much European racing and don't get to put themselves up against these top climbers, which are all based in Europe. It's crazy, isn't it? Because she came seventh, but yet the feeling on the finish line was that we almost saw Van der Breggen and Van Vleuten, and then almost no one for ages, and then Mormon Passio and Cecily Ludwig, and kind of everyone else got kind of slightly forgotten behind. But yeah, the person who was kind of doing the best work for Katie was Leah Thomas, who I met last year, I think, when she was at a different team, when she was at 2016, which is kind of a Olympics build-up start-up team. And she had actually only started racing about 4 years before that. And before that, she was a teacher, and she was very into her running to try and get rid of the stress. Then she got a bit of an injury from running, and she was like, right, I'm going to take up cycling, I'm going to go out on my bike just to de-stress after a hard day. And then she's become a top racer, and what an experience being out there today.
Leah, how was it out there?
It was hard. It was really fun. It was, yeah, it was hard.
Was it in, like, anything you've experienced before?
No, I've never done a race with that much climbing back-to-back, with so little recovery in between. And I'm really grateful we had the opportunity to do such a hard course, but it was definitely hard.
And you were just phenomenal, staying out there for so long, and the only one of that first break to stay out there.
Yeah, I felt like we felt as a team that I was a strong enough climber that would be the best way I could help Katie to give her the best shot of winning and kind of take the pressure off the team. And so I was really glad I was able to make the break and really give it my all there to help out.
And what was it like when you turned around, looked behind you and saw the peloton coming, and then you started pulling away from them once more?
Yeah, it was, I mean, you're not caught until you're caught, and so my goal was just to keep pedaling as hard as I could until I was really caught, and then, you know, just do my best to get to the finish line.
And was this always the plan? Were you like, yeah, I can do that, or were you a bit like, ooh?
I thought it definitely fit my strengths a little better. I know I'm not a strong enough climber right now to be hanging out with Van Vleuten or, you know, the really top climbers in the world. And so to be able to contribute feels really special.
So that was Leah Thomas from United Healthcare. We should say that our episode from the Tour de France for Kilometre Zero, our morning show on Wednesday morning, was devoted to La Course, and it was stuff that we recorded throughout the race. We hear in that episode also from, a bit more from Ashley Moulin-Passio, Danny Rowe, the winner, Annemiek van Vleuten, and Cecily Utrecht-Ludwig. But she was so effusive on the finishing line, well, just beyond it, where she slumped to the ground. She if she wasn't in tears, she was close to tears. Orla was certainly in tears listening to her. And she was very
emotional. I wasn't the only one.
You weren't the only one. She was very emotional. I just had something in my eye at that point. She was very emotional and happy, you know, and certainly today was a performance that caught the eye. I mean, she has, in the last few weeks, been, you know, riding into some really good form and starting to deliver on her potential, because she was a real revelation last year in a lot of the big races from Strade Bianche onwards, really. And that's good to see. And she's a very appealing character. She's a very open, engaging person. We heard from her a couple of times during the women's tour. We did play some of her interview at the finish in Kilometer Zero in the episode from the La Course, but we should hear a bit more from her, I think, in this episode.
Yeah, let's have a listen.
It was perfect. Like, I couldn't have rewriting it much better, you know. It was just like the perfect day. Like, the whole team was working so good today, and having even Lotte, you know, in the early breakaway, actually bridging on a climb, you know, and she's a sprinter. So it was just crazy. And, you know, I saw the moment and went, and, you know, putting the other teams under pressure was amazing. And, you know, the people cheering out there, seeing so many Danish flags, and even people having Ludwig on a banner, was so crazy. I mean, this is a day I will remember for the rest of my life.
You must have thought that this is possible.
Yeah, I mean, especially on the Colombia, when I had like 50 seconds or I don't know, a minute or something like that, then, you know, you feel like you've been hit by a truck, but, you know, you just keep on going and just trying to deal with the pain, because you know that the other girls, they are also suffering. And, you know, it's just also so cool to have Thomas Campana, my sports director, screaming in the radio, like, you can make this! Like, you know, trying to motivate me. And we really showed how great women's cycling is. And this was the perfect place to do it, because there's so much media attention here. And, like, it's live all over the world. So, and it's so great, really.
Presumably you'd like to see more races on these types of courses with, you know, proper climbs. But we've seen the last few weeks, you know, the women's tour, you really took it on there. The course didn't really suit you. Giro Rosa, you rode extremely well. And today, again, what's clicked for you the last few weeks?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, just before the oval, because my spring has really been disappointing from my side. And I was like, what is wrong? I mean, I can't pedal, you know, I can't push the pedals. And then I found out that my wisdom tooth was infected, and we pulled it out. And ever since my wisdom has been pulled out, it's just been like going better day by day by day. And, you know, it's crazy how much a little tooth can affect your performance. It's crazy. So, just a good advice out there, if you're having bad legs, pull your wisdom tooth out, because it's absolutely crazy. I mean, since then, better day by day. So I hope that the second half of my season will be a good one.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Féminin, brought to you by Skoda. Dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Yes, that was Cecily Utrip Ludwig, who I am fully and unashamedly in love with. I have honestly never witnessed... Stop shaking your head, Richard. It's true and it's allowed. And I think anyone who was there watching that interview, genuinely everyone actually, could not help but be moved by it. I spoke to Kayleigh Fretz afterwards and he said there was more emotion in those few minutes of interview with her than we will get in the rest of the men's Tour de France put together.
You didn't see the John Degenkolb interview then?
Oh, no, true.
We're projecting here. But no, she was just wonderful. And there were tears in journalists' eyes. And we're not allowed to admit that, because we're supposed to be very hardened and cynical and all the rest of it. But she breaks that down. She was wonderful.
And yes, she has had good results coming into this. I think she was sixth in the Giro Rosa. She's won the Danish National Championships this year, but that's the only win this year. Last year, she won the general classification of the Semana Ciclista Valenciana, but without a stage win. She also won the youth jersey of the Giro Toscana, again without a stage win, and won the young jersey of the Women's World Tour, but didn't win a stage, a single day race, other than, once again, the Danish National Championship. So her last individual win was in 2016. So she's incredibly consistent with her results, but not someone who has stood out at the front of races yet. And to see what that meant to her was quite overwhelming. And really, I think, if we're all honest with ourselves, that kind of emotion is the reason you get into sport to begin with. It's why you love it as a kid. It's a kind of intensity of emotion that you forget as an adult, because we do become hardened. And it was just a joy to witness that with her today.
I have to say, it was like looking at a Renaissance painting just past the finish line. So there's this huge crowd of journalists, like, and like, almost like a halo around Cecily's head. Like, everyone was absolutely craning their necks to hear what she had to say.
Adorable, adorable.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. A reminder, you can get 25% off all your Science in Sport products at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25 at scienceinsport.com. That's if you live in the UK. And it's not in conjunction with any other offer. We're very grateful to all our sponsors, of course. Rafa is our headline sponsor, and Skoda.
Actually, corrections.
We got an email from somebody.
Pronunciation police. Yeah. I think it's Skoda.
Yeah, we got an email from somebody called Spike, who then signed his name Spike.
but he's Czech.
That sounds kind of almost Norwegian. It's like Scandinavian now.
That's how he says you pronounce it. Well, it's a very short
Skoda.
Skoda.
Skoda. Well, it's a very nice car, and we had it at the Women's Tour, the Karoq, and we're driving it here at the Tour de France as well. Lovely.
It's almost like being home, being back in that.
It's been the decals have been changed a bit, so now we've got Cycling Podcast Femina on the side and Cycling Podcast on the bonnet, and it's all the cohabiting,
yes.
The Cycling Podcast Femina and the Cycling Podcast within the same
car. It's our own little Cycling Podcast bubble on wheels.
It is a little bubble.
Not that we could all actually fit in it at the same time, I don't
think. It's pretty big though, Rose.
We could. We've just got too much luggage.
Too much luggage, right.
But we could all fit in.
Anyway, it's doing us well here at the Giro. There's a helicopter overhead. The Giro Rosa. Orla. I mean, a lot of riders here rode the Giro Rosa. We spoke to a couple of them about it this morning. But can you tell us what happened?
I can. 10 stages, but buckle up.
10 stages in 10 seconds. Go.
It seemed to have been a fantastic race. So, stage one, team time trial. Team Sunweb went into this as favourites, as they were the world team time trial champions. Finished with the fastest time, had to wait to see if they were the fastest overall. Mitchelton Scott came close. They only finished, though, with the minimum four riders, and they finished 1 second behind, which they were delighted with. Amanda Spratt saying it was the best team time trial they had done. But Sunweb with the fastest time, and the former world champion Ellen van Dijk were the first Maglia Rosa of the race. Stage two was the first of three consecutive sprint stages. It looked like it could have been a day for the breakaway, though. The sprint teams leaving it rather late to organise the chase. They only caught Sheila Gutierrez of Silence and Maria Arzufi of Bizkaia with 500 metres to go. Exactly. They were caught, though, and Kirsten Wild of Wiggle High Five continued her strong season with a win to go with stage wins at the Tour de Yorkshire, Tour of Tongmeng Island and the Healthy Ageing Tour. She beat two former world champions to the line. Georgia Bronzini of Silence, second on her last Giro Rosa, actually. And Marianne Vos of Wildales in third. Lucinda Brand of Sunweb picked up bonus seconds at the intermediate sprint to take the leader's jersey from her teammate Van Dijk. Stage three, it was slightly safer for the bunch in the end, with a breakaway caught at 5 kilometres to go. Sarah Penton of Virtue Cycling, Chiara Perini of Top Girls Fassa Bortolo, and Carmela Cipriani of Concera Zabri Fanini were the riders in the break, with Penton doing the lion's share of the work. They were caught, though, and Julian Dora, another informed sprinter after her stage win at the Women's Tour, coming off a broken collarbone, don't forget, with a win for Mitchelton Scott over Kirsten Wild and Canyon SRAM's Alexis Ryan. Another day, another Sunweb rider in the Malia Rosa by the end of the day. This time, it was Leah Kirchman. Stage four was the second win in a row for Mitchelton Scott's Julian Dora. I keep pronouncing her name differently, don't I? Julian, I said a minute ago. Julian, I think it is, isn't it?
I think I change it every time
between Jolien and Annemiek van Vleuten and Van Vleuten as well.
I think Julian. I'll go for Julian Dora. Well, she out-sprinted Ali Cipollini's Marta Bastianelli and Cervelo Bigla's Lotta Lopisto, the stage winner, of course, of the final stage of the Women's Tour. That was her best result of this Giro. As with stage three, Dora had to come from behind to launch a long sprint. She was boxed in at the final corner, so a strong second sprint win for her. Stage five was billed as one for the climbers, and in the end, it was one for the breakaway. Ruth Winder of Sunweb, once again, part of a three-rider breakaway with a win just ahead of her compatriot Taylor Wiles of Trek Drops, a brilliant result for her, and Italy's Alice Arzuffi of Wowdales. And that meant that Winder, an American all-rounder, became the fourth Sunweb rider to take the leader's jersey. On to stage six, which was the first of two summit finishes. We had a select group of contenders making it to the final climb together, including Mitchelton Scott's Amanda Spratt, Annemiek van Vleuten and Cervelo Bigla's Ashley Moulman-Passio. Spratt took the win, though. That was her fifth of the season and became the first non-Sunweb rider to take the leader's jersey. She was 30 seconds ahead of the overnight leader, Ruth Winder, and 33 seconds ahead of her teammate, Annemiek van Vleuten.
The bells
and those
are
bells
tolling.
Are not tolling for me. I'm still going because we're only on stage seven and it's getting better. An uphill time trial. So a remarkable performance from the world time trial champion, Annemiek van Vleuten. She covered the 15-kilometre course nearly 2.5 minutes faster than her nearest competitor, Ashley Moulman-Passio. Lucinda Brand finishing in third. And with that, van Vleuten took the leader's jersey, taking it from her teammate Spratt and continuing the trend of sharing the Malia Rosa amongst teammates. Stage 8 had a technical descent off the final climb of the day. Three rider group got away in that descent, with the three of them cooperating well to stay clear of a group of 20 who were chasing behind. And it was Marianne Vos who took the sprint. That was her first stage win of the year, and that was ahead of Elisa Longoborghini and Lucinda Brand, who was up there once again. Stage 9 was the stage that everyone was waiting for. The Monte Zoncolan, back after 21 years. So the first time that any of these riders have experienced it in their career. And it lived up to expectation. We had a three-rider break of Silvia Valsecchi of B-Pink, Olina Pavlukina of BTC City Ljubljana, and Sarah Penton again of Team Virtue Cycling. They were clear after 40 kilometres, but caught before the foot of the Zoncolan. Ashley Moulman-Passio then attacked with just over 5 kilometres to go, and only Annemiek van Vleuten had the power to stick with her. Now, van Vleuten played a very clever race. She stayed on Moulman-Passio's wheel until a relatively flat section. Then she attacked. It seemed that Moulman-Passio had gone a little bit too deep. She said later that she had hoped to bring the Dutch woman back before the end. Van Vleuten built up a lead of 1 minute. Moulman-Passio did start to bring her back. Too late, though, closed the gap to 40 seconds, but that was the margin by which Annemiek van Vleuten won on the Zonkelan. Moulman-Passio held on for second with Amanda Spratt in third. And then finally, stage 10, Annemiek van Vleuten won her third stage of the Giro Rosa. She soloed to the finish line of stage 10 after attacking in the final kilometre of the last Category 1 climb. That was with 10 kilometres to go. Lucinda Brand then beat Kashyna Viadoma to second in the group sprint. So van Vleuten with the overall win with an advantage of over 4 minutes. Ashley Moulman-Passio was second and Amanda Spratt was third.
Thank you very much, Orla. That was wonderful.
You're passing me a bottle of water to lubricate the vocal cords.
Your voice might need it, but no, that was actually quite...
I've got a strong old voice. You have worry
got,
about me.
No, I've got a strong voice. I wouldn't dispute that at all. But that was a good summary of what, as you say, did sound like a great race. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because it goes on while the Tour de France is on, which inevitably makes it a race that can, you know, fall
compete
in the shadows of that. Mm. I gather that the reason, and you might know this better than me, Rose, that it's so that in Italy they can show the Giros after the Tour de France in Italy. So
yeah, that's
the,
right,
the,
yeah,
the scheduling kind of works for the Italian TV audience.
Yeah, it is, but it's not a lengthy highlight, actually. It's, I think, well, last year I seem to remember it being only about 15 minutes or something, the highlights that they did. But because it goes on straight after the end of the men's Tour de France stage, it does get huge numbers in Italy. But then that doesn't help all the other countries, does it?
It's interesting. I was speaking to Bob Varney of Trek Drops at the start this morning. He had a team there for the first time and a team here today for the first time as well. And he commented that the top three overall had all really prepared for that race. I mean, none of them rode the women's tour, as we spoke about when we were at the women's tour. And they'd all been to altitude, he said, to prepare for it. And, you know, that sort of really sacrificing some racing to prepare for the race. You know, we see that in men's cycling a lot. Mm. It's kind of a shame if the top women are not riding all the top races, but maybe that's the way it's going. I mean, Annemiek van Vleuten, that was an extraordinary performance from her. And you wonder how she'd have got on with Anna van der Breggen there. Van der Breggen, as we heard earlier, said that after so many years of doing the Giro, she just needed a break from it. But it's, you know, interesting, an interesting time, really, to be wondering who's the best female rider in the world at the moment. I actually asked Amanda Spratt that very question at the finish today. She is Mitchell & Scott teammate of Van Vleuten, and she said that, you know, for as far as she's concerned, Van Vleuten is the best rider in the world at the moment, and it's difficult to argue with that. But
especially after today,
but it's very, very even, isn't it, between
very,
those two?
Yeah.
Shall we hear from a couple of riders who we spoke to this morning, who've just come here straight from the Giro and told us a little bit about that, and then we're going to hear a little package from Hannah Troop, who was out at the Giro Rosa and spending a bit of time with Bols Dolmans, actually. So we'll hear a couple of her interviews and a bit of chat with her. So we'll hear from Ashley Moulman-Passio. And Orla, you also spoke to
Lucinda Brand.
So let's hear from Ashley Moulman-Passio and then from Lucinda Brand.
Yeah, this year the Giro was really awesome. I mean, it's very evident that they've also taken a step up in terms of their exposure. I know I have been critical before about the Giro, and in the Cycling Podcast book itself, I wrote about how, you know, they haven't necessarily invested enough in making sure that the race gets the attention and exposure that it deserves. And this year it was evident that they did make a good effort. So the crowds were great, and there was more interest of the local people, and then, of course, you know, highlights and TV exposure every day, which was really great. Of course, there could be more, and I still get many messages on Twitter and all over saying, oh, we really wish we could have seen your battle at the Zonkeland live. And, you know, people are starting to really notice. I think someone mentioned to me that Lance Armstrong made a comment, oh, you know, women are real racers. Yeah, I watched one stage. I was like, well, what did you think before, you know? Obviously, the level of women's cycling is increasing every year. But, you know, we've always been real racers, and we've always, you know, we invest just as much time, commitment, energy into the sport. And I think it's becoming more and more evident the more people see our sport. So, yeah, I mean, the Giro was amazing. The course was really spectacular. It was really an exciting course. We got the same really tough climb like the men did. And I think, yeah, women's cycling is obviously on the up. We just keep asking for more live exposure.
When you mentioned the Zonkeland, is that evidence that people are starting to listen and take women's racing a little bit more seriously? And how good is that for you to have that kind of platform as well to show off what the women's peloton can do?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, we train really hard at home and we put it all in, and, you know, we take the sport just as seriously as the men. But, yeah, of course, we need the platform to be able to show that, you know. And so having a climb like the Zonkeland included in the Giro is really important this year. And I'm really grateful for that opportunity to have an uphill time trial, you know, and then just to have more exposure so that people know what's happening. Because it also doesn't help that we have a crazy hard climb like the Zonkeland and we put on an amazing show and no one sees it, because that can also become frustrating for us, you know. There also needs, although media attention is not what motivates me, you know, it is important for our efforts to be noticed.
Lucinda, congratulations on a fantastic Giro. You had a really strong race, the leader's jersey, aggressive on a number of stages. How do you feel it went?
Yeah, I'm really excited how it went. Really, yeah, happy that I could surprise even myself like this. I went to the Giro for GC, but never expected to be fighting for a podium place. So, yeah, I'm really happy about the performance.
You're no stranger to stage wins at the Giro, but even you surprised yourself then with your performance?
Yeah, you know, the times that I took stage win in Giro, I was never in GC. So then sometimes I did came back in GC, but I was always on time. So they look less to you for the GC. So that's the reason they can let you go. And we decided this year to go for GC. And then later on, the parcours came out. And then we went, ooh, that's a lot of climbing. And not like short climbs, but really real climbs, like for the light girls and stuff. So yeah, we made a good plan, and it all turned out pretty well, so that's awesome. Of course,
there was a lot of climbing, but you were competitive on a variety of stages, from downhill finishes to flats to mountains. I mean, that must give you a lot of confidence, does it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and I know I'm all around, and it's great to show in a GC race like Giro that I'm all around, and even can go up with the best climbers, but also have energy left for the more flatter stages or give a lead out to our sprinter. Yeah.
So I'm with Hannah Troop, who was at the Giro Rosa. Lucky you, Hannah. What were you doing there?
So I was over there covering stage 8, which was on the Friday. It was the day after the TT day, and I was embedded within the Bulls team for 40 hours nearly.
And what were your impressions? Was that the first time you'd been to the Giro Rosa?
Yeah, it was actually. So unfortunately, I only got to cover sort of 1 or 2 days and missed out on the Zonkerland stage, which I was pretty gutted about. But yeah, it just kind of feels like it's one of those races. I know there's been a lot of talk since La Course about a women's Tour de France, but really, we just need to make that a lot better race. And the coverage, and especially with the Zonkerland stage, like that was such a massive stage for that race. And if it had been live, it would have been absolutely amazing. But
and the crowds?
The crowds were not too bad, actually. On the stage that I covered on the Friday, it was there were certain parts of it, like in all of the races, where there was a bit more people around on the ascents and on the climbs and everything. The one thing that I did really realise, actually, on that stage was I was in the team car, obviously, following the race. And so although you can't really see what's going on in the race, you get a feel for what the race is like in a way. And the one thing that we just don't get to see is, so on the final descent, there was the attack that was the winning move from Mariana Voss, Lisa Longo-Borghini and Lucinda Brand, who are renowned for being phenomenal descenders within the peloton. And the way I saw Lotta Lopisto and her teammate Clara Kopperberg just descend that final descent, which was quite a sketchy and technical descent, was just insane. And we just don't get to see that. We get to look in awe at a nibbly descent down a mountain, but honestly, to see the girls descend was phenomenal, really.
And you did a few interviews for us while you were out there.
Yeah, so I interviewed Danny Rowe post the stage, and that was obviously the day that Mariana Voss had won.
Her teammate, of course.
Yes, of Wild Deals.
How was that today then, Danny?
Yeah, it was a really hard day. Everyone wanted to be in the break, so it was literally attack after attack after attack. So I feel like I've done about 300 sprints today, but yeah, we're so happy. Mariana has waited for this win this season, so super, super happy for her. Kept Sabrina safe as well, obviously, for the GC, which is that goal. But yeah, it was my favourite stage so far.
And was that the plan first thing this morning, was Mariana to win?
Yeah, obviously GC is our main aim, but if it was all together coming into the finish, then yeah, we were going for Mariana.
And how do you think the feeling is going into Zonkerland tomorrow? So have you ever done a climb like that before in a race?
No, never. The climbs so far have been hard enough for me. But yeah, for me it'll just be a case of trying to look after Sabrina until then, and then just getting up. Hopefully we've got some small gears.
The big talking point, I suppose, of the week was Annemiek van Vleuten's win, and in particular her time trial, which was phenomenal.
Yeah, so that kind of took everyone by surprise. And we had a chat with Jean Bates after stage 8 to find out, because she was the only rider that went out on a TT bike. And so I also spoke to Annemiek and to Jean about what was the rationale behind putting her on the TT bike. And they said that towards the top of the climb, it flattened out quite a lot. So that was where they thought having a TT bike, they could take back quite a bit of time. But even though they still had quite they weren't on deep rims, so which obviously you get a lot of gain on the TT bike for that. So it was quite interesting why they decided to go with that move. So here's Jean Bates, sports director of Mitchelton Scott.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know how much difference a TT bike made. We knew it wasn't going to be slower than a road bike. And the potential there was to gain some time in the straighter sections or when the climb backed off. And that was a risk she and we chose to take. She's put a huge amount of effort into preparing for that yesterday. So it wasn't an overnight decision. We'll just put you on the time trial bike. There was a lot of forward planning went into it.
They were saying towards the top of the climb, there was kind of around about 3K that kind of flattened off quite a bit. Do you think that made a big difference then using it for that part at all?
Yeah, and there were some sections in the lower part of the climb also where, you know, she really built speed and was able to get into a good tuck. And even just a K or 2K an hour here or there really made a big difference. And then obviously that flat section at the top was when she made a big chunk of time as well.
And was she expecting to make as much time as she did on that climb yesterday? Her distance was about 2.5 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. You know, we never aim to take a certain amount of time out of other people, but we just try and put the best ride together possible. And it was a pretty good ride, obviously.
So that was Jean Bates of Michelin Scott. Interesting insight into Annemiek van Vleuten's performance and her choices. And she ended up a convincing winner. She won on Mont Saint-Colin as well, of course, ahead of Ashley Moman-Passio. But it was a really convincing win. And I gather you had breakfast one morning with a couple of riders on other teams.
Yeah, so I had breakfast and was interviewing Kasia Nwiedoma and Alexis Ryan from Canyon SRAM.
I think it took everyone by surprise just how strong Annemiek was yesterday on the time trial.
Yeah.
When she crossed the line, everyone started to laugh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, because of just how fast she was?
Because of the gap, yeah. Like 2.5 minutes, like that's just unreal. I mean, that's more than just one level ahead of everybody, I think. So.
Because was she the only one that went out on a TT bike then?
Yeah.
Everyone else was on just normal road bikes.
I think the first half she had 30 seconds on Moomin in the first 7.5K, which I was actually surprised. I thought with the time trial bike on the more gradual section she would have had more time, but it was the second half where she gained like a minute
30?
45. Yeah, something like that, or 2 minutes. So,
and that was when it got steeper, yeah.
Yeah.
Which you kind of think, well, at that point, that's when you, it gets a bit of a... It goes against you being on a TT bike than the road, doesn't it? The position.
I guess, if the bike is light enough and she's strong enough, you know, she didn't have a disc or anything. She had climbing wheels and things like that. But it was, especially that last 3K, that's definitely where it helped her.
Yeah.
She was probably able to get up to, like, I would say 45K an hour.
And so how are you feeling going into Zonkalan?
I'm just going to try and make it up it. I mean, we had one of our teammates, Elena, she pre-rode it a couple weeks ago. She said it's way harder than the climb yesterday that we did in the time trial. So, and that one I felt was pretty hard.
Yeah.
So,
I think it's going to be all about like staying on the bike and like also not expending your energy in the first part of the climb, because then you can blow up and not be able to even finish the race.
I think you're going to see a lot of people with like knee and back problems after that one. I mean, I think they said most, I don't think there's going to be a caravan following, because in the men's Giro they were burning out motors, so.
Well, and in the men's one they had to get the mechanics on the back of the motorbikes and carry the wheels on their shoulders, didn't they?
I think that's what our mechanics are going to do, just get on some scooters.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Yeah. It'll be fun. Yeah. Hopefully it's a nice view.
Yeah, so I mean, the Giro Rosa is quite an extraordinary race. Amazing racing, amazing courses. But we do always hear about the organisation of it being a bit off. And I think it's improved a lot this year. They've got better TV coverage than ever. But I did hear from Amy Cure, actually, from Wiggle High Five, who I saw yesterday, that she and about 11 other riders got pulled from the race on what would have been, I think, Stage 8, the day before the Zonkalan. And they were in a gruppetto at the back. Someone came along to them and said, well, an official came along to them and said, guys, you have to be pulled from the race. You're half an hour behind. You'll never make the time cut. So they went on a few extra kilometres, pulled off to the side, said, right, we have to get off the bikes. And then they find out that actually they were only 6 minutes behind the peloton. They would have easily have made it in the time limit. They tried to appeal it, of course, and the teams did all they could, but the commissaire said decisions made. But then the Giro Rosa, which is this is a real cheek, Giro Rosa then put out a message saying that these dozen riders decided to retire from the race because of not being able to handle the heat.
Shocking.
It is shocking.
You do, as you say, Rose, hear these stories. I mean, Bob Varney, it was his first experience of it, and he said that contrary to what he'd heard, he found it to be very well organised, but there are clearly still problems. I mean, it does seem to, certainly as far as the riders are concerned, it seems to be it's the pinnacle, really, you know, in terms of a testing properly challenging course.
It's a brilliant course.
I think the women's tour has other things to offer, doesn't it? In terms of organisation, prize money and so on, and crowds and profile. But yeah, it's still, yeah, and here we are at La Course, and it was a fantastic race. But as Ashley Moolman said, it was on a Tuesday. It started at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of, you know, buzz around it, and there wasn't a lot of effort made by the tour to really promote it. There was live TV coverage, so it's like give with one hand, take with the other.
We were in a local village last night where we were chatting to a whole load of cycling fans, and they said, I mean, clearly they follow the sport very closely, and they said that they didn't even know La Course was happening today. So they didn't know La Course was in their part of the Tour de France until they found out about the road closures and what time the road closures were. And by all accounts, they were getting bits of information through their door. So they were getting leaflets through their door, but nothing about La Course. And I do think that, I mean, fantastically today, the women took it all on themselves. They took the responsibility and the privilege of having that platform and really showcased the sport. But wouldn't it be nice if that was backed up by a little bit more will at the very top of the sport?
Absolutely. Speaking of which, I spoke to David Lapartion, the new UCI president, at the Tour de France a few days ago. We'll hear that interview in next month's episode of the cycling podcast Femina. It was about women's cycling and what he is going to do to promote it, help promote it and develop it further.
I can't wait to hear that. I haven't heard that yet.
No, you will.
Interested,
it's coming. And another bit of news that's happened while we've been out here is the Trek Factory Racing new women's team announced on the rest day here at the Tour, and that will be headed by Lizzie Dagnan. And lots of rumours about riders who may join that team. Names include Elisa Longo-Borghini, currently a Wiggle High Five, also her teammate there, Audrey Cardon-Rogaud. So we'll wait and see. A lot of uncertainty about Wiggle High Five. There have been stories about whether that team has a future, problems there. There have been rumblings of discontent at Wiggle High Five for several months now. The Trek Factory Racing team news is obviously, on the one hand, wonderful because it's another, you know, major backer really supporting a big women's team, and that's going to be another team to take on the likes of Mitchelton Scott and Bulls Dolmans and
Sunweb
and the other big ones. But there's also the fact that Trek have this year sponsored Trek Drops, a smaller team, and they will not be sponsoring them again next year. And, you know, Bob Varney, who runs Trek Drops, hasn't commented on this publicly, but I think that, you know, when they formed this partnership with Trek, I think it was in anticipation of it becoming a long-term partnership and allowing the team to develop. So I think that's a great shame. And I understand John Burke, the guy who runs Trek, was asked about Trek Drops at the press conference, and his answer seemed a little bit blunt, that Trek Drops would need to look for a new bike supplier, sponsor. So, you know, it's quite late in the year. I don't know when Bob Varney heard about this, and I don't know what it really means for the team, but they will certainly need new sponsorship. It's quite late in the year to be looking for new sponsorship for next year already. So, you know, wish them luck with that. And I think it's a shame that Trek seem to have pulled the rug a little bit from under Drops in order to set up a new, what looks like it's going to be a good and very competitive team, which is great, but there is a cost to it, I think. Finally this month, we're following the progress of some other riders who are completely new to cycling, and it's a group of women,
me and Rose,
from the Telegraph, who are riding the 100 mile Ride London event at the end of July. They've never ridden bikes really much until recently, commuting, but no more than that. And I went into Telegraph offices recently and met them to hear their story and how they're preparing for this event. 100 miles is a long way, as we know.
Yep.
So we're going to hear from them now, and then we're going to hear from them next month to find out how they got on.
My name is Alice Vincent. I'm an arts writer for The Telegraph.
My name is Bryony Gordon, and I'm a columnist at The Telegraph, I think.
My name is Boudica Fox-Leonard, and I am a weekend lifestyle commissioning editor and writer.
100 miles, do you even just like those words? 100 miles is insane. Like, if you did 100 miles driving in a day, it would be exhausting. I mean, I think I can probably do it. It just depends in what speed and what time. At the moment, it's fitting in the hours to make up enough time to do it. You know, doing 8 hours in a day, even that's a very long time to sit on a bike. And I haven't even begun to think about the mental capacities I'm going to need to get me through it. I'm just not going to, I think.
I had a Pashley a couple of years ago, like a pink Pashley. And it had a basket on the front and a child seat on the back. And that's my experience. I can ride a bike. I haven't even sat on my racing bike for this yet. But I think that a lot of it is mental capacity with endurance things. If you say you're going to do it, you do it.
I have really clear memories of learning to cycle and then a massive gap between like then and now. Apart from the odd bit of holiday cycling and a bit like Bryony, I am the proud owner of an old lady sit up and beg, basket on the front, bit on the back, like, you know, poodle along the canal bicycle, which I love. But actually that's super heavy, that bicycle. So getting this racing bike that Skoda has given us, it's been an absolute dream. I feel super whizzy. So I'm like fully confident that, I mean, if I was doing it on my own bicycle, no way. But on this one, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get up Box Hill like that, straight up. Each morning I get to almost to work and I pull up outside the Houses of Parliament and there's the statue of Boudica, my namesake, and I'm like, and she's on her chariot and I'm on my bicycle and I'm just like, oh yeah. There we go. Though I've definitely noticed that, you know, there are huge amounts of guys who are really confident cyclists, and you know, the ratio to women is, you know, a bit dispiriting, but you know, there are some women getting out there and doing it. They tend to be slightly older, in their 30s, and obviously have like built up that confidence to do it. But talking to friends since I've started doing it and hopefully encouraging them also to get out there and cycle has been really positive.
We had this really great training day in Richmond Park with Adam Blythe, Juliet Elliott and Hannah Barnes, who are obviously all professionals and very calm and very cool. And what I love afterwards is that Adam was like, well, you're nowhere near as bad as I was expecting you to be. So what was so funny about it is that they were so experienced that when we were like, how do we change gear? It's like asking someone, how do you breathe? It's so natural to them.
I think it's really important that you're able to show that these events are not just for people who are doing it for time and for, you know, and for speed. It's a really lovely day. You know, you get to cycle 100 miles from Stratford through to Surrey and then back again. And, you know, that's how we encourage people to do exercise. It's, you know, because I think we're very much brought up in this country with this belief that if you're not good at sport, then you shouldn't do it at all. You know, that's what we learn at school. And it's like, that's not true. And I love exercising. You know, I'm a curvier, I'm a bigger woman, I'm like a size 16 to 18. But I love it. It makes me feel good. It's, you know, and I think so we've got this sort of idea about exercise all wrong. And it's the moment I took time out of it, the moment I take time and competitive nature out of it, I just get on and do it and like go, oh, what is the win for me? The win is that I've just made myself feel high without going to a pub or eating cake. It's that great feeling, and I think you just got to enjoy it and go, who cares? As long as we get it done in the 8 hours, like, you get a medal. And even if you don't get it done in the 8 hours, who cares? You've done it, you know, like, you've still done it. And I think it's to be applauded, and I think we need to like let that message get out a bit more.
And what's been really interesting is that since I've had the fancy Skoda bike and the fancy Skoda kit, I am treated so much more differently. And I think it's because I'm dressed and I have a bike like the other men on that bike. I'm not on my 1980s road bike. I'm not in like a dress. And suddenly I have this whole new level of respect, and it shouldn't be about that. And so I think to participate in being really good on your clip-ins or having a swib while you're going along would be disingenuous to why we're doing this.
So that was Alice, Bryony and Boudica, and we will hear from them next month to find out how they got on. That's all from us for this month. See you in August, Rose.
Yes, merci et au revoir.
Très bien. À la prochaine. Merci beaucoup.
Thanks, Orla.
A cycling podcast, Femina, in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, RAFA exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.